What if the solution to our economic crisis was also the solution to our environmental catastrophe? In 2008, as America hemorrhaged jobs and gas prices soared, this wasn't just a thought experiment. It was an urgent blueprint for survival. Hurricane Katrina had already shown us what happens when climate disaster collides with economic inequality. The poor drown while the privileged evacuate. The hurricane wasn't just supercharged by unusually warm Gulf waters. It was intensified by neglected levees, funds diverted to oil wars, and a society that had long abandoned its most vulnerable. Meanwhile, the richest 1% held more wealth than the bottom 90% combined. CEOs earned 400 times their worker salaries, and 16 million households lived in extreme poverty. These twin crises, ecological collapse and economic inequality, weren't separate problems. They were two faces of the same broken system, and they demanded a unified solution. Environmentalism has evolved through three distinct waves. The first emerged in the late 1800s, when writers like Thoreau and Muir awakened Americans to nature's value. President Theodore Roosevelt set aside 194 million acres of protected land, though the movement split between Gifford Pinchot's pragmatic resource management and John Muir's spiritual preservation. The second wave arrived in the 1960s with Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, questioning chemical pesticides despite industry attacks. The first Earth Day in 1970 led to the EPA, Clean Air Act, and Endangered Species Act. Yet this wave had a troubling blind spot. Led primarily by affluent whites, it ignored toxic pollution concentrating in poor communities of color. Three of five largest hazardous waste landfills sat in predominantly Black or Hispanic neighborhoods. Today's third wave is driven by economic opportunity. Venture capitalists pour billions into clean tech companies, corporations showcase eco-credentials, and both political parties embrace green initiatives. But this raises a critical question. Will climate solutions create eco-apartheid, a divided society where ecological haves enjoy healthy green products while ecological have-nots languish in pollution, smoke, and fumes? Creating an inclusive green economy requires challenging the military petroleum complex through a green growth alliance, uniting civil society with green businesses. Organizations like the Apollo Alliance and Blue Green Alliance already demonstrate this model, bridging labor, environmental groups, and industry. Yet the movement falters when perceived as serving only affluent Americans, wealthy celebrities with hybrids shopping at health food stores. When California's Proposition 87 failed despite $40 million in backing, oil companies spent $100 million convincing voters the measure would hurt poor consumers. The eco-elite cannot win alone. The movement needs eco-populism that improves ordinary lives while reducing costs. Deep divides persist. Affluent white progressives rarely collaborate with communities of color locally, while many communities of color resist white-led coalitions fearing betrayal. Leaders from impoverished areas prioritize social justice. Affluent leaders emphasize ecology and business. We need a hybrid movement, fusing social justice with ecology, entrepreneurship with activism. Consider Amistad meets the Titanic. Traditional activism resembles slave revolt, the oppressed rising against oppressors. But if those rebels realized they were on the Titanic, their mission would expand from liberating captives to saving the ship. Crisis rhetoric motivates the privileged, but alienates those already in crisis. Economic opportunities, however, engage these communities powerfully. Slogans like green jobs, not jails, resonate by addressing economic, criminal, and environmental justice simultaneously. Green-collar jobs provide quality employment that helps the planet while offering family wages and advancement. These middle-skill positions require more than high school but less than a four-year degree, making them accessible with proper training. Many can't be outsourced since they involve transforming local buildings and infrastructure. Los Angeles retrofits will save $10 million annually while creating career paths from entry-level to skilled trades earning $50 an hour. Milwaukee's Me Too program lets residents retrofit buildings with no upfront costs, paying through reduced utility bills. 12 Dakota reservations hold enough wind potential to meet 41% of U.S. energy demand. In Pennsylvania, Spanish wind company Gamesa repurposed a former U.S. steel plant, employing former steelworkers who now build clean energy components. In Richmond, California, Solar Richmond is creating 100 solar jobs while training residents and installing panels for low-income homeowners. Urban agriculture is transforming food systems. Chicago's 80,000 vacant lots could produce 40 to 50% of the city's food and create 42,000 full-time jobs. These pathways reclaim thrown-away communities, offering second chances to formerly incarcerated people and urban youth. We can connect people who most need work with work that most needs doing. Any transformative movement needs guiding principles. First, equal protection for all. In ecological crisis, those without money suffer first and worst. We must reject sink or swim individualism, for we are all in this together. Second, equal opportunity to benefit from the green economy's bounty. With each green enterprise, ask, how can we make this inclusive and empowering to those disrespected in the old economy? Third, reverence for all creation, not just non-human life, but thrown away children, neighborhoods, and nations. Turning principles into reality requires government as an effective partner. During the Great Depression, FDR used government power to help people, stimulate the economy, and restore the environment. Today's crises demand equally bold action, a comprehensive Green New Deal with coordinated policies to accelerate market-led transition. This means creating 5 million green jobs, cutting emissions 25% below 1990 levels by 2020, and establishing a national smart grid allowing decentralized power production. Cities are leading the way. Chicago set an 80% emissions reduction goal by 2050 and attracted a solar manufacturer by committing to purchase $5 million of panels, creating jobs for local residents, including ex-offenders. Green assessment districts allow neighborhoods to collectively finance home improvements through property tax assessments, with energy savings offsetting costs. The obligation attaches to the property itself, spreading costs across multiple owners. We face one of history's greatest transformations, a complete overhaul of our political and economic systems. Rather than being paralyzed by eco-apocalypse, we should be motivated by it. The coming crises demand collective action and a new concept of leadership, ordinary people becoming giants of the new century. In just 1 year, green-collar job exploded into political consciousness. Presidential candidates called for them, community colleges offered training programs, and mayors proclaimed their commitment. Yet we've won the argument for change, but haven't secured enough public support to implement necessary solutions. Like the greatest generation that defeated fascism and the civil rights generation that fought segregation, we must win a better future. The old activist mindset of David confronting Goliath has a shadow side, requiring the protagonist to remain small while defining success through confrontation. Perhaps Noah offers a better model, a leader preparing for a difficult future while saving as many people and species as possible. With each solar panel installed, each building retrofitted, each community garden planted, we move closer to a just and sustainable world. The green-collar economy isn't just about saving polar bears or creating jobs. It's about reimagining our relationship with each other and with Earth itself. We don't inherit the Earth from our parents. We borrow it from our children. The time to walk this path is now.